Today is Thursday, April 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Americans brace for impact from the COVID-19 pandemic as New York's governor warns this isn't limited to just big cities.
We have rural areas, and just the way it's gone through rural New York, it will go through rural America.
Also ahead, singer Lizzo is showing her gratitude to worn out and hungry hospital workers. It's all on today's International Edition. The World Health Organization is voicing deep concern about what it describes as the rapid escalation and global spread of COVID-19, which has now reached 205 countries and territories.
The number of deaths has more than doubled in the past week. In the next few days, we will reach 1 million confirmed cases and 50,000 deaths.
More evidence is emerging that coronavirus infections are being spread by people who have no clear symptoms. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has that.
Researchers in Singapore estimate about 10% of infections are sparked by people who were not yet showing symptoms but did in fact have the virus. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has now changed how it's defining the risk of infection, essentially saying anyone may be considered a carrier, whether they have symptoms or not.
The new evidence led the U.S. government to issue new guidance warning that anyone exposed to the disease can be considered a potential carrier. Meanwhile, more than 4,000 people have died in the U.S. from the outbreak. New York continues to be the U.S. epicenter for now. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo gave another sobering update on Wednesday.
Number of deaths, 1,900, up from 1,550. That number will continue to go up.
Cuomo also said he understands people want answers about what happens next. However,
nobody knows what's going to happen. And I understand the need for closure, the need for control. We're at a place we've never been before. We're out of control. I need to know. Nobody can tell you.
Distressing images of morgue trucks taking away bodies from hospitals in New York City underscore the latest grim projections for the entire country. Experts warned that there could be 100,000 to 240,000 deaths in the U.S., even if social distancing guidelines are maintained. With thousands potentially infected with no visible symptoms, there is a sense of urgency for doctors, nurses, and others trying to save lives while risking their own. The American Hospital Association has launched the 100 million mask challenge to get help in finding personal protection equipment that healthcare workers have been begging for. Joining us to talk more about it is Priya Bhatija, Vice President of Strategic Initiatives at the American Hospital Association. Thank you so much for being with us. Before we talk about the project, can you just tell us if hospitals are starting to see supplies arrive and if they are arriving to the right places?
We are starting to see supplies arrive, but I don't think that we have figured out how to get them to the right places quite yet. And the challenge, of course, and this is the same challenge that other countries have faced, is that, you know, the outbreak is happening differently in different parts of the country. So one of the things that we are trying to do is figure out when we have PPE available, we can get them to the places that have the greatest need. And so that is something that we're working on for the future. And of course, it's COVID-19 time future, so it's something that we hope to have an answer for early next week and as we continue to look at how to best provide access to PPE for hospitals.
What are the most urgent needs that hospitals are facing that they don't have right now?
What we're seeing from the areas that have had the first outbreaks of COVID-19 in the United States are a shortage of N95 respirators, isolation gowns, isolation masks, surgical masks, eye protection, intensive care unit equipment, and diagnostic testing supplies.
We're already hearing that this is starting to put a strain on hospitals who don't have all the things that they need, like you just mentioned, some of those personal protection equipment. And we're hearing that this is about to get a whole lot worse in the next couple of weeks. So how concerned is your organization that hospitals will be overwhelmed and unprepared to deal with what's coming?
Well, we're really concerned about making sure that hospitals have the right protective equipment for their healthcare workforce that are on the front lines. We also want them to have the supplies they need in place to treat patients, so things like vents. And we are concerned that these are going to be areas where we have tremendous amounts of shortage as the virus continues to become present across the country. And so, you know, we've taken a variety of approaches to getting more of this equipment, whether it's the PPE or ventilators or other equipment. We've taken a number of steps. You know, we are supporting the federal government as they ramp up testing, supplies, and capacity. We're sharing and encouraging hospitals to follow the CDC recommendations on how to best use and preserve existing supplies and personal protective equipment. We are supporting more funding for hospitals. And then I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but we have launched our 100 million mask challenge to help increase the production and supply of PPE nationwide.
Tell us about the 100 million mask challenge.
Well, it is a national call to action to increase production and supply of PPE for our caregivers on the front lines of COVID-19. And the challenge was originally launched by Providence. It's a health system with 51 hospitals in 7 Western states, and they launched this in Washington state about 2 weeks ago. They've had a tremendous outpouring of support from individuals, businesses, and manufacturers. And because one manufacturer in their community stepped up, their name is Cass Tailored, they stepped in and they are now helping to produce surgical masks and shields for Providence Hospital in Washington. And because of that success and the outpouring of support that Providence received, they came to the AHA and said, we'd really like you to take what we've started and make it a national campaign. That's exactly what we did. Our ultimate goal is to create as many avenues as possible for healthcare workers to get the PPE they need. We want to take any steps that we can to connect hospitals with manufacturers that want to come together, with businesses that have PPE to donate. We're looking at the whole spectrum. But for now, what we have for manufacturers and hospitals is we've provided tools and resources on our website that they can access so that if they want to come together and partner, they have specs and designs for various pieces of PPE. And that can really allow them to shorten the gap in time between when they decide to come together and when they can actually begin to produce and manufacture masks. So really, we will be expanding the Providence model featured surgical masks and shields. We've already been able to share design specs for a number of other types of PPE, including N95 masks, and even moving outside of PPE. Today, we were able to share some specs that Medtronic made public for ventilators. So we are going to continue to expand what we're able to share, so that when we have manufacturers and hospitals that are willing to come together, they have the resources they need. We're also looking at developing platforms that would allow us to connect people who want to donate PPE to hospitals that have the greatest need for PPE, as well as those manufacturers that are coming to us and saying, well, we have PPE ready to go. How do we get it to hospitals? We are trying to create channels there as well to make sure that that PPE moves to the right places.
Priya Bathija, Vice President of Strategic Initiatives at the American Hospital Association. President Trump on Wednesday acknowledged that the federal stockpile is nearly depleted of personal protective equipment used by doctors and nurses to safeguard themselves. Australian authorities are telling foreign cruise ships floating off the East Coast to immediately sail home rather than risk flooding hospitals with coronavirus patients. But the operator of the most well-known vessel, the Ruby Princess, says the government in Canberra needs to adopt a humanitarian approach and let the company repatriate its foreign crew. There have been more than 4,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Australia. 20 people have died. We get more now from Sydney with Phil Mercer.
There are 9 cruise ships either docked in the state of New South Wales or waiting off the coast. On board are thousands of international crew members from dozens of countries. Australia is refusing to let them disembark because of fears they could worsen its COVID-19 crisis. New South Wales Police Commissioner Mick Fuller says the vessels must return to their home ports.
You know, they don't pay Australian taxes. They're not considered in terms of someone who we want to bring back on shore to risk the people of New South Wales and also potentially put our health system under enormous pressure by bringing these people back in.
The 10th of Australia's coronavirus cases have come from a single cruise liner, the Bermuda-flagged Ruby Princess. Infected passengers were allowed to disembark in Sydney just over a week ago without proper checks. It's the biggest source of the COVID-19 infection in Australia. The Ruby Princess's owner says it's not safe for it to sail away from Australia while there are crew members who are ill. On board are 1,100 people from more than 50 countries. 6 people have been allowed off the cruise ships for treatment in Australian hospitals. Some have tested positive for COVID-19. 2 pregnant women have also been allowed to disembark. Any vessel that remains in Australian waters without permission can now be subject to heavy fines or even jail terms. Officials have said they will continue to allow the ships access to fuel and food. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The Italian city of Bergamo was hit hard by coronavirus and became the country's center for the disease. Now that there are signs infections are slowing there, observers are realizing what went wrong. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
The head of the city of Bergamo's Doctors Association, Guido Marinoni, says that back in January, pneumonia cases were not recognized as the novel coronavirus. He says doctors in the northern Italian city did not have adequate protective gear and were not being tested despite showing light symptoms. Areas that should have been locked down, he added, were not, and that augmented the spread of the virus. Marinoni says testing of doctors only started last week and many still don't have necessary protective gear. The doctor says the true number of dead and infected is much higher than reflected by official figures because they only account for patients who are tested or die in the hospitals, but not those who die at home or in elderly care facilities. Marinoni said the population in elderly homes in Bergamo is approximately 6,000, and in 1 month alone, 600 have died. The doctor says as signs of a possible plateau in new infections emerge, it will be important to return to normal activity slowly, ensuring that people who were infected or isolated are tested carefully. He said that if we let people return to work too soon, it will reignite the outbreak and the fire will return. This, he added, will cause devastating damage, not only for people, but also for the whole economy, because it will continue and not end. Marinoni's forecast is that an emergency situation will continue for months in Italy and that eradicating coronavirus will be dependent on people's behavior and testing efforts. The reality, he says, is that only when a vaccine is found will we be certain the problem will be eliminated. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Here are some of the other top stories we're keeping an eye on at VOA. COVID-19 patients in Paris were moved by military helicopters Wednesday to other parts of the country with unoccupied critical care beds as the country saw a record increase of deaths from the new coronavirus. Also, deaths in elderly care homes across France have recently come under scrutiny. Airlines are finding ways to retrain laid-off cabin crew staff as medical workers to help in hospitals currently overwhelmed by the pandemic. 30 former employees of Scandinavian Airlines started training this week to learn basic skills to assist in nursing homes and hospitals. Airline cabin crew are considered good candidates to work in hospitals because they're already required to complete medical training to serve aboard flights. The U.S. Navy says 3,000 sailors aboard a U.S. aircraft carrier where the coronavirus has spread will be taken off the ship by Friday as military leaders struggle to quarantine crew members. The USS Theodore Roosevelt is now docked in Guam. About 93 of the 5,000 sailors assigned to the Roosevelt have tested positive for the virus, while hundreds more are waiting for test results. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. Social distancing to slow the spread of COVID-19 is also changing the tactics for political campaigns, especially for those candidates running for president of the United States. VOA's Steve Reddish examines the changing strategies and endangered traditions.
In a matter of days, the U.S. presidential campaign has gone from this to this.
We were planning a big rally in Cleveland tonight, but the governor of Ohio asked the presidential campaigns to cancel their indoor public events in Cleveland with large, large crowds of people. And that's what we did due to the coronavirus.
Coronavirus is changing the 2020 campaign playbook. More than a dozen states and territories have either postponed primary elections or change to a vote-by-mail ballot, delaying the Democratic Party's crowning of a presidential nominee. Frontrunner Joe Biden now conducts webcasts and podcasts from a makeshift studio in his Delaware home. Campaign staff works remotely.
We're going to win the great state of North Carolina in a landslide.
Those raucous rallies by President Donald Trump are on hold, trading his normally busy travel schedule for daily visibility at White House coronavirus briefings.
We're doing that quite accurately.
It is certainly very beneficial for him to have the ability to speak to millions of people on a daily basis.
Jacob Rubashkin is a reporter and analyst for Inside Elections, a nonpartisan elections analysis website. While most candidates and campaigns are actively using social media to get the message out and raise money, he says campaign spending will be different, too.
You're going to see a lot more money spent on paid advertising, and that's for two reasons. The first being you can't send people door-to-door to candidates and pass out literature. Those interactions are, you know, really not possible in the age of social distancing. And also, it's really hard to earn media as a candidate because what everyone wants to hear about is the coronavirus pandemic.
Adapting political strategies around a pandemic happened after the 1918 Spanish flu, when Republican Warren Harding won the 1920 presidential election by staying in his Ohio hometown while hundreds of thousands of voters flocked to hear him speak from his front porch. If avoiding crowds remains in place, voting in November may become confusing. Jacob Rubashkin is with Inside Elections.
There are only four states in the country right now that conduct elections entirely by mail, which means there are 46 states that have significant populations where voters just aren't accustomed to mailing in a ballot.
Customs like going to the polls, shaking hands, kissing babies, and selfies with a candidate may fall victim to the 2020 stay-at-home campaign.
It's great to meet you.
Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music.
Wake up, dance this music.
Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Africa's security experts say efforts to fight the coronavirus pandemic has been complicated by armed conflicts on the continent. Calls are growing for ceasefires to give healthcare workers safe access to all those at risk. Stacey Knott reports from Accra.
As African nations gear up and lock down to fight the spread of the coronavirus, security experts say armed conflicts across the continent are hampering efforts. Vladimir Antri Danso is the Dean of Academic Affairs at the Ghana Armed Forces Command and Staff College. Speaking via a messaging application, he says the virus poses additional problems for African countries in conflict.
Those countries experiencing war throughout the world are at great risks because already there are no good systems in place. And where there are no systems, combating the virus or combating the epidemic has been found to be very disturbing.
There are at least 15 armed conflicts across Africa, and almost all nations on the continent have confirmed cases of the coronavirus. There are growing fears that the most vulnerable will be worst affected by both conflict and the respiratory disease caused by the virus COVID-19. Last week, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres appealed for a global ceasefire to help stop the coronavirus, calling it the world's common enemy. The UN chief said safe corridors were required for health workers and to bring life-saving aid to those in need. John Campbell is a senior fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. Speaking via Skype, he says calls for ceasefires are well-meaning but limited.
After all, insurgencies, most of the time, think what they are being insurgent about is much more important than anything else.
Campbell says the coronavirus could also play to separatist movements by undermining confidence in governments. However, one insurgency group declared its intention to adhere to the call for a ceasefire and also encouraged other separatists in Africa to do the same. The Southern Cameroon's Defence Force, one of the rebel groups fighting for an independent state in Western Cameroon, said they had listened to the UN call. SCDF spokesman Ebenezer Akwanga, in a statement Monday, said they would lay down their arms for 2 weeks to allow civilians to get tested for COVID-19. Akwanga also leads the Organisation of Emerging African States, a group that offers advice to African separatists. Speaking from Ghana via a messaging application, he says rebel groups should not stop medical aid reaching people in need.
The possibility could be created for international humanitarian workers to move into these war-torn zones and for these international humanitarian workers to be assured of their own safety and protection.
It did not appear that any other rebel groups fighting in Cameroon or other African nations agreed to ceasefire as clashes continued this week. Akwanga says Africa's frontline fighters need to understand that they are among those most at risk from the virus. He says people should come together to see the coronavirus as a common enemy that takes no prisoners. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
VOA's International Edition continues. The Trump administration Tuesday rolled back Obama-era mileage standards and gutted one of the U.S.'s biggest efforts to slow climate change. The Obama administration had set the tougher rules to encourage production of electric cars and more energy-efficient vehicles. Tailpipe exhaust is a major contributor to climate-changing emissions. The Trump administration argues relaxing mileage standards will save automakers the cost of new emissions technology and make vehicles cheaper for Americans to buy. Joining us now to talk more about it is Luc Tournechel, director of the Natural Resource Defense Council's Clean Fuels and Vehicles Group. What is your reaction to the rollback?
You know, it's really incredible. While so many are suffering from the potential health threats of the pandemic and we're facing economic downturns, the rollback of the fuel efficiency and clean car standards is going to increase pollution, threatening our health more, and also cost drivers more money at the pump. So it is just a really big step in the wrong direction and couldn't have come at a worse time. This is going to result in a massive increase in carbon pollution. And the federal agencies that finalize this rule, by their own numbers, there's going to be an increase of about 900 million metric tons of carbon pollution. To put that into context, that's like adding over 216 coal-fired power plants and running them for a full year.
Why do you think this is happening now? Do you think it's because there's distraction, or do you think that there's a logic behind why they decided they needed to do this?
You know, this is an effort that they started 3 years ago, and they took a really long time to get to this point, in part because they were having such a hard time of coming up with reasonable reasons to do it. I think that they work to push it out now because they're afraid if they waited much longer and there's a new Congress, that the new Congress could come in and overturn it.
Who does this benefit?
It benefits nobody except for the big oil companies. Those are companies that benefit by keeping us hooked on driving gas-guzzling vehicles. Absolutely nobody else benefits. And in fact, Americans have supported strong clean car and fuel efficiency standards because they reduce pollution and they save money. We're going, you know, totally backwards in that direction. And the auto industry themselves were not asking for this at this scale.
Is there any legal recourse that your organization is going to take or can take?
Absolutely. So while the rule has been finalized by the Trump administration, this is absolutely not over. And we plan to see the Trump administration in court. These rules do not live up to the requirements of the law. They are illegal and fundamentally unjustified. And so we're going to be working to get them overturned.
It's interesting, even the former president, who's been remarkably silent in the last 3.5 years regarding anything, has spoken out about the danger of overturning these issues. I would imagine not only because of the health risks, but also, of course, we're still dealing with a climate crisis that needs to be urgently addressed. And this seems like it would be a reversal in doing that.
It's a huge reversal. And in fact, these clean car and fuel efficiency standards were the largest program on the books in the federal government to address climate change. And now it's getting yanked away.
That's Luc Tournechel, director of the Natural Resource Defense Council's Clean Fuels and Vehicles Group.
I do my hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
Feeling good as hell.
Hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
Feeling good as hell.
Singer Lizzo, known for her inspiring spirit, is proving she also has a very generous heart. The Detroit, Michigan native has sent meals to weary emergency room hospital doctors and nurses at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit. She also delivered a video message of gratitude on social media for healthcare workers on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic. You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Gagne, I'm Lori London in Washington. Please take care and be well.
I know we did you wrong. We can make it right. So go and let it all hang out tonight.
is VOA News via remote. I'm Tom.